Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the City Council meeting for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, January the 5th, 2016. I currently have 7:02 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. Tonight's invocation will be given by the mayor, and then our pledge will be given by one of our scouts tonight. I hope I'm saying your name correctly, Efrain Saramento. Close? All right. Maybe you can give us your name when you come up, right after I finish. Our Father, which art in heaven, we are grateful this evening to be able to gather together as leaders in the city and also some of our residents and friends. Pray that we may be able to have thy spirit in our meeting and in every meeting and be able to do the work of the people in a transparent, honest way, in a manner pleasing unto thee. We're grateful for those who have volunteered to serve our city and pray that they may be able to do the good work that they want to do as well. And we say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Efrain?
May the audience please rise. Please repeat the pledge after me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May the audience please be seated.
Thank you, Efrain. Okay, next item on the agenda tonight is to approve the meeting's agenda. So if someone has had a chance to take a look at the agenda, would like to approve it as is or amend it, I will take that now.
I move that we approve the agenda as is.
Okay, I have a motion to approve it as is. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been seconded by Mr. Zappala. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Next item is public comments. I forgot to pick up the sheet. Let me go grab it. I have one name that has written it down. Mr. Haar, Jason.
Yes.
You're here, and you want to. Do you want to talk now or wait for item 11 to come?
I'd like to wait.
Okay. All right. Very good. So if there's no one who had intended to speak during public comments and didn't sign up, then I will close our public comments at this point, and we'll come back to you later, Jason.
Okay. Thanks.
Great. Okay. Our consent agenda. Looks like there is minutes from the November 12th, 16th, 2015 meetings, plus special City Council meetings, and the November 17th, 2015 City Council meeting. So those are the minutes that need to be approved. There's also the appointment of the City Recorder, Ms. Mulvey, the Treasurer, David Bunker, and the appointment of members to the Planning Commission, Beautification, Recreation, Parks, Trails Committee, and Board of Adjustment. So someone like to make a motion on that. If they want me to read the names of the appointments, I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, please do.
Okay. The appointments to the Planning Commission are John Dredge, Lorianne Spear, to complete the remainder of the terms vacated by Glenn Dodge and Don Steele as regular members of the Planning Commission beginning January 2016 with terms ending December 31st, 2016. To appoint Craig Clement to a three-year term as a regular member of the Planning Commission beginning January 2016 with the term ending December 31st, 2018. To appoint Brian Miller and Jared Anderson as alternate members of the Planning Commission beginning January 2016 with the term ending December 31st, 2016. To appoint Darren Lauder as a member of the Board of Adjustment beginning January 2016 with the term ending December 31st, 2020.
Can I interrupt you on that one? I just was noticing that term is that a four-year term then?
It appears to be.
Oh, okay. Are the other people that are on there, are they serving four-year terms?
So that's a different.
Is that right?
So that's the board of adjustment for Darren Lauder, and then for the Planning Commission, then.
I know that Planning Commission is a one-year or a three-year term.
David's saying it's 5 years for Board of Adjustment.
The board of, to the end of 2020. To the end of 2020.
So it's a five-year
appointment by COVID.
Oh, okay.
And then the Chris Fowler and Ben Ellsworth as members of the Beautification, Recreation, Parks, and Trails Committee. So those are the appointments.
So can we discuss this for just a moment?
Excuse me?
Can I discuss this for just a moment?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So Planning Commission, I'm looking at the list of members and alternates, and I'm wondering how many of those are continuing from the current Planning Commission and how many of those are brand new?
The brand new members.
So the brand new is just alternates, or are there any brand?
They're alternates.
If you go to this page.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
And then you will see we just barely appointed Steve Thomas. I think it was in late November. And then the two new members are Brian Miller, Jared Anderson as alternates, and John Dredge, Lorianne Spear are moved up to members from alternates.
Okay. So my concern there is that I feel like the Planning Commission has been a little bit out of step with the will of residents as they've made decisions in this past year. Has that been communicated to them as you've met with these members of the Planning Commission for appointments? Have they committed to doing some land use training or something else to put them in better touch with residents and their concerns?
Certainly has been communicated to them that training is important and they need to get that. And it has not been communicated to them how they should think or operate.
Yeah.
But it has been communicated to them that it's important to me, I think it's important to the council, that they take their job seriously, that they know all the facts that they're dealing with, and if they have questions, then they need to, if they haven't received training on it, they need to seek out answers to their questions immediately. And there's a number of sources that they can go to for that.
So do we have any requirements that Planning Commission members receive land use training in order to remain active on the commission?
I don't know if there's a requirement. I have talked to Mr. Bunker about how much training is available, and Utah League of Cities and Towns does have that, and we've talked about having perhaps Jody Hoffman from the league come in and give training.
David, is there training planned?
There is training planned, and we have had training in the past as well. It probably has not been as consistent as we need it. I know several years ago we had a training. They actually came here to the Vista, and all the other communities brought their representatives here to be trained, as well as our own. But we are in contact with Meg Ryan to come and do another training, and so they have that on their schedule, and we will be getting in touch with all of our committees to come and get more training. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Nope.
Okay, thank you. So that is our consent agenda. Someone like to make a motion to approve the consent agenda? I will take that.
I'll make the motion.
Thank you. I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Motion's been seconded by Mr. Bailey. All those in, let's actually have a roll call vote on this. Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Nay.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Zappala voted nay. All right, moving on. City reports and business. So starting from my left, Mr. Bunker, why don't you start off?
So Junior Jazz officially starts today with practices and games. And this year we have 824 participants, which is up about 50 from last year. And we did add ninth grade for this year. That's a very successful program. And our city routinely gets notice for having a stellar program every year, and so that's another great year for us. We are sad to report Natalie Scott, who works here at the Recreation Center, has turned in her resignation and will be leaving for another position elsewhere. So we will be filling that position shortly and taking some applications. We just really appreciate the hard work she has done for our city in making our event center so successful. And we have a new theater class that will begin Thursday evening. The production will be Little Mermaid, and we currently have 75 students enrolled. they practice the same night as celebrations, and they need space as well, so we're working through that as well. I had several meetings with the Timpanogos Special Service District in December. We approved the final budget. It was modified from what was proposed initially, and in the January-February timeframe, we will be again looking at modifying the rate structure for treatment cost. That was a large discussion item on the agenda. It did pass. The current budget did pass with the current rates, but the board wants to consider modifying those lower. That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Bailey?
Nothing for me.
Mr. Crawley?
I don't have much, but I just wanted to, as far as my responsibilities, but I did want to just give a shout out to Trent Augustus and say thank you for his years of service and for all he did for the city and his hard work. And he's not here to hear that, but I just wanted to thank him for his efforts, and we're sad to not be serving with him anymore.
Thank you very much. Okay, so mayor's reports. Mr. Cipolla, you had asked me to speak with the mayors of Highland and Alpine over the Christmas season about the studying of a community pool, which I have done. And so we had a wide-ranging discussion about a number of things. And so we talked about our arts communities. Each of us have arts communities in our city, and we're looking at creating some type of overarching group that will promote the arts that are taking place in each city. So Cedar Hills has something going. Highland and Alpine promote that. Maybe there's residents that come in and attend our activities. We attend some of their activities. Everyone's attendance and success with their arts activities goes up. So we're talking about how that works. Same thing with recreation. We're the only city that has a recreation department. The other two do not. And so any type of sports activities that take place in their cities are done by private organizations. And so we've talked about how we can coordinate better as three cities and make sure that youth that want to recreate have ample opportunities, and let them know about the things that we're doing, so if their residents want to participate in our recreation activities, they can do that. So now we move to discussion on the pool. And so they have a similar realization that I think I have, which is that I don't think that Cedar Hills can do a pool by itself. Alpine doesn't think that they could do a pool by themselves. Neither does Highland. So they're open to the idea of the three cities pooling their efforts. And there's a caveat there, and I'll get to that in a minute. And in the Utah State Developmental Center land that's been master planned, then there is a section of that land that is earmarked for community events or community center or something like that. So it's conceivable that there could be, if all three cities agreed to have a pool that would be down by the high school, so the high school students could practice there as opposed to going to AF. Alpine School District has said that they would pay the fees of those students, but they're reluctant to be a financial partner in this. So it was clear from the other two mayors that they are not going to promote this to their residents. They think it needs to come from the residents, and I agree with that. So that if there is a large enough group of residents from each city that says, yes, we want to do this, yes, we're willing to probably bond, yes, we're willing to subsidize this, then at that point, then I think it can go to the next level. So they're willing to take a look at studies that have been done by our city in terms of what a pool could do, and see where it goes from there. Does that answer your
question? Yeah, that's great. Thank you. I really appreciate you doing that.
Okay.
Sounds like those residents and myself, if we're interested in pursuing this, that we have some organizing efforts to engage in.
You're going to become a community organizer.
Yeah, it's a strong history of that in this country.
And so there, and also over the Christmas holidays, I attended a board meeting of the State Developmental Center, and they were voting on whether to punch through a road from Highland that would connect over to Cedar Hills, and they approved it. So now the state legislature has to in turn approve that. And so the road would come from Pheasant Hollow Development over by Highland. There'd be a roundabout on the west side of that developmental center land, be the northwest end, and it would connect to Harvey Boulevard at this point.
And so, who is this who voted? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Did you say City of Highland voted?
Was it City of Highland voted?
No. Or the Board of the State Developmental Center.
Board of State Development
Center. Because the Developmental Center owns the 250 acres that make up that land. And so the northern part of that land, north of the canal, has been master planned. Mm-hmm. The state legislature approved it. But the Board of the Developmental Center land had to approve it as well. They voted, they did approve it.
So that they go in line with the master plan that we've seen?
The master plan is not determined yet. So that's why the Developmental Center land board, voted to approve a road that connects to Harvey Boulevard.
There were two options presented in the master plan.
There was actually three.
Three options, yeah.
And so the county has to build the road from Pheasant Hollow to Harvey Boulevard. If the state legislature passes it in this next session, then they hope to start construction in this summer of 2016, connecting the road to Harvey Boulevard. That doesn't preclude a road connecting to Cedar Hills Drive. Mm-hmm. They just can't afford to do that right now. But
will they need the approval of Highland to do that? Because that's always been a stumbling block here.
Yes. So,
as I understand it.
And so the City of Highland seemed to be very in favor of getting this road punched through.
Really?
So at least the road that connects to Harvey. Now, in terms of how the developmental center land eventually gets master planned, there's a preliminary master plan already, right? Mm-hmm. I think everyone's probably seen that.
Yeah.
That may change. But there's a road from that roundabout, kind of a diagonal road that would connect over to Cedar Hills Drive. That's still planned, but there's no money to build it. Therefore, it was not voted on. And I asked them when they would anticipate doing that, and they said, we don't know. Kind of depends on when the county has money to build that road. But I think that's good news that they're going to punch a road through from Highland that will connect to Cedar Hills, Harvey Boulevard. We believe. Kind of depends on what the state legislature does. So I think that's good news. It helps Cedar Hills and our commercial zone and all of that.
So why would the county be in charge of building that?
Because I believe that they are the governing body over the road in that area. But I don't know if they brought up exactly why they were, but building up. But they
has
have
it been annexed into the City of Highland. It's probably not in the City of Highland.
No, I think that land is clearly in the City of Highland.
Okay.
That's north of the canal, but the county has responsibility for building the road. Maybe it's because it connects to North County Boulevard. I'll find
Sounds
that
like
out.
David knows a little more about that.
Actually, it's an east-west collector road, so it has regional significance, and it collects two state routes, and it's on the master transportation plan for the county. So
there you go.
That's why the county's involved.
Yeah. So the county is the one who's paying for the road.
Is the state going to provide funding when they approve it, or they just approve you build it with your own money, county?
Well, they approved it. The county was there, and the county was saying, yes, we have the money to build this road.
So, the county.
So now the state legislature just has to approve what the board did, and that will happen. Now that when the rest of it happens, I don't know. So there is MAG meetings and council of government meetings this Thursday. I'll report back on those later. That's all I have. Mr. Sapala.
So my only report is just what we're talking about in council meeting today, which is that at our council meetings last year, Jenny and I volunteered that we would step up and help write major revisions to our commercial development guidelines and our zoning guidelines. And so we're starting this process, and we've started talking about it in our working sessions. If the public has some feedback for us about how they would like zoning in the commercial district to look, then they should contact us and give us their input.
How are you going to communicate that to the residents? Because they need to know that you need feedback.
Well, we're going to talk about it here in public meetings, and we'll talk about it in the social media as well.
Not everybody listens or attends these meetings. In fact, very few do. Yeah. So I would suggest that we come up with other means in order to communicate to them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else?
Nope, that's it for me.
Okay, Mr. Geddes.
Okay, the only thing I have to report is it's the ongoing of the Utah County Dispatch Building. It has broken ground, but the winter has stalled it a little bit, so it's in a little stall pattern waiting for frost and things, but there'll be a meeting this month.
Okay, Mrs. Reese.
I don't have anything.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's move on to our first action item, which is the appointment. Give me a moment here, please. Of Mayor Pro Tem. This falls on Mr. Crawley this year. Mr. Bunker, I think you're going to present on this.
Mayor and Council, consistent with our city code and the state code, duties of the mayor pro tem are defined in our code. And if the mayor were absent in a meeting, then the mayor pro tem would administer the meeting, start the meeting, get that going, do the mayor's duties. Council member Zapala, Reese, and Augustus have all served as a mayor pro tem, and the next council member to serve would be council member Crawley. His term would begin this evening and continue through next January 3rd of 2017. And so staff recommends that this body elect a mayor pro tem to serve in that capacity if the mayor is unable to do that.
Okay. Council, someone like to make a motion on this?
I move that we elect Councilmember Crawley as Mayor Pro Tem, who shall have all the powers and duties of the mayor during his absence, disability, or refusal to act according to state and city code.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been seconded by Mrs. Reese. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Starting from my left, Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Zapala.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Next item, number 10. Okay. These are assignments to members of the City Council, staff, and residents to certain boards, committees, and entities. Mr. Bunker, you're presenting.
So, Mayor and Council, this list is a little bit different than what's in your Dropbox folder, so I'm passing that out. There were some changes that came in to us just the other day for the Family Festival Committee.
Do you have additional copies? Thank you.
So there were a few changes at the last minute, I believe, with the Family Festival Committee. So City Council members, staff, and residents are resources and liaison to some boards and committees where they may be voting members and where they participate in doing items for the city. And the mayor, with the advice and consent of the City Council, makes these assignments to these various boards. So on the list that you have in front of you is the proposed assignments. And the staff recommends that we approve those by resolution for the members of the community, the staff, and the council. So if you could look through that list and see if it looks accurate, that'd be great. Hopefully we have everything on there.
David, I went through the one that's in the Dropbox. What changes were there?
I think on Family Festival, there was a deletion of one member and maybe an addition of two.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Okay. So nothing major.
No.
I see a lot of changes with and I have some questions. So I see that I'm on the General Plan Citizens Advisory Committee now.
As an alternate.
That's an alternate. Okay. And then beautification
No, the general plan, that general plan committee, that's still the committee that's going on now. Okay. And you were on that committee before, or Trent was.
Yep. Trent was.
And yeah, so that's right.
So Trent's still chairing that committee.
That's right. Oh, okay. But as a council representative.
And so Rob would be. I don't think you attended any meetings last year because I believe you were an alternate.
Okay. And yeah, so, and I see I'm on an alternate on the one on in our Dropbox. So yeah. I didn't know if that – it didn't say alternate, so I was just clarifying that. So, and then the other question I have is it shows me on the beautification recreation parks. Is that a change that's been made? Or is that an error on the sheet that I just got?
I believe that you're on that committee as well. Did I
oppose? That's the mayor's proposal.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's not on the,
so
it's
you may not on the front. You may not be on the committee now.
I think it's just because you were listed as an alternate on that one on the memo that we have in our Dropbox. They listed all of our assignments and our alternate assignments.
Oh, okay.
This new one only has our assignments.
That's right.
Not the alternate assignments.
I see what you're saying. Okay, so I'm an alternate on that one also. Okay, I did want to make a comment too. Not that I care all that much, but just looking at the numbers, most people have two assignments. Mayor Gigi has 7. Jenny has 3. I have 1. Jenny, I feel bad for you because you have so much responsibility on your shoulders. I'd offer to be the main person on the Parks and Recreation if that would ease your burden a little bit. That would be me too and you too. But if that's not something you'd want, I'm okay with that too.
I told the Parks and Trails Committee I would sit on that committee this year. Uh-huh. But I think you have two, don't you? You have General Plan Committee and North Point Solid Waste.
Yeah, the General Plan is an alternate. I doubt that I will have much responsibility as an alternate.
Oh, I see.
So that's why I'm offering.
You're going to find that the North Point Solid Waste is a fairly busy assignment. Busy? That's why I gave it to you.
Is that more than one meeting a month?
No, it's just one meeting a month, but they generally have subcommittees.
Okay.
And so that's I sat on that for a little while before I was appointed mayor, and I found that to be a fairly busy assignment.
Okay. Just wanted to offer.
Thank you.
David, and then I assume when it says term ends, that's the end of the year. Like,
yeah.
For instance, on the Board of Adjustment, Priscilla League, her term ends 2016. That's the December 31st.
Yes.
Okay.
Keep in mind, if you're an alternate for a board or a committee, you should attend the meeting if the main person cannot attend. Now, if you have the assignment to go to that committee and you can't make it, please contact the alternate and tell them, I can't make the meeting. Could you fill in for me? Some of the boards, you may not be able to be a voting member because you're not sworn in as a voting member, but it's important that you attend anyway to get the information. And that's why we've tried to have an alternate for most of these boards and committees so that information continues to flow through.
So have you, just looking at Utah Valley Dispatch, is there an alternate? Last year, I think it was.
Let's see.
It
should be on the list.
Ben Bailey's the alternate.
I don't have it on my.
It's in the agenda.
Oh, okay.
There's one that just talks. It looks like.
For which one?
Utah Valley Dispatch.
Yeah, just let me know.
Yeah,
there will be times. I mean, it's during the day.
Yeah, it's all good. Just let me know.
Okay.
Any other questions? So this is a resolution.
Oh, I actually do have a question. So on item 10B, where it lists in our packet, it has boards, committees, appointments, and alternates. On the general plan committee, it says appointment Trent Augustus, alternate Rob Crawley. But isn't Rob the actual council liaison for that committee?
He is now. He's
not really the alternate. He is the council liaison.
Yeah, and so I thought that's what I was communicating. Last year he was an alternate, but now Trent is going to continue to chair, but Rob's actually the council liaison.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So it's just wrong on this spreadsheet
here.
We have.
On this
so you are the council liaison.
You are expected to go.
Okay, well, that's plenty of busyness for me then.
That's where I was confused when you were saying you only had one, because you're the council liaison.
Yeah, it listed me as the alternate, so that's why it was confusing me too. So okay.
We'll make that more clear on that sheet.
Okay, any other questions? If not, I will take a motion on this resolution.
I move that we approve resolution number 1-5-2016A, a resolution assigning members of the City Council, staff, and residents to the City of Cedar Hills, Utah, to certain boards, committees, and entities.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
I second it.
Mr. Geddes seconded it. Let's have a vote from my right side. Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Mr. Cipolla?
Aye.
Mr. Crawley?
Aye.
Mr. Bailey?
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Next is item number 11. That is a discussion on the driving range fence. Mr. Gordon, you want to come forward? That's right. Do you want to, Jason, would you like to speak first? We're on item number 11 now. So if you want to come up and state your name and address, you will have 3 minutes.
Sure. So my name is Jason Haar. We will be living at 10483 Mesquite Boulevard, just across the street. My wife is here with me. Her name is Cookie Haar, and we just, again, would like to thank you guys for your time and your consideration on our points. So just kind of going off the agenda here, we just kind of wanted to just touch base on just a few of the points being described here on the agenda. And so starting off with the first ones, it's our unprofessional opinions that items number one and two of the items to be considered won't work. And we base our opinions off of the fact that we've been there for approximately 8 months watching the situation firsthand. I personally have never seen any vandalism or any kids on purpose hitting golf balls over there, and we still find bucketfuls of golf balls on our property. And I personally have sat on my porch and watched golfers in live hit golf balls over the net onto our property and into the park. So whether you have cameras or staff members there watching, it's a fact 99% of the human population can't golf like myself, and there's going to be errant golf balls whether you have cameras or not. Now, I'm sure they will help in those 1% instances of kids dinking around, and a staff member could tell someone to stop dinking around if they are on purpose, but it's our opinion, just watching the situation, that raising the nets is the most effective option. And that's backed up by the fact that our back door neighbor in the stucco house that was built there first, he's commented that since the nets have been raised there, the golf balls on his lot have decreased by about 50%, about half. And it's his opinion and our opinion, after kind of going down there and golfing myself, even with the nets, we kind of think that the nets maybe initially were installed maybe not where they were supposed to, maybe too far west, because when I golf there, sometimes I'm teeing off where the net is actually behind me. And so my backdoor neighbor and myself think if everything was just shoved east a little bit further, even more of those golf balls would not be errant than his 50% being decreased. And then going off of our net being installed, even if we did install a net on our property, you still have the issue of the park and joggers and cars and walkers that use that every day. And then just last point, we just wanted to see if the city has looked into the extensions. And I don't know what you guys are going to discuss, so take these points as how you may, but these are kind of our initial thoughts. So the extensions, we've seen that at BYU or the golf course next to BYU, and that could be an option. And we're just hoping whatever is resolved before spring. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So that leads into our presentation by Mr. Gordon.
Great points. Those are good points. I appreciate it. What I'm going to present on are just recommendations that the council asked us in our meeting about 2 months ago to look for a couple of options. The options that Mr. Haar is speaking of are those, the first one being installing the cameras. And we had a little bit of discussion in the work session just prior to this, going off some of your points you made. I'm first of all grateful that you've never seen a kid purposely doing that. So that kind of speaks to what we talked about a little bit earlier. There's no doubt it does probably happen on occasion, though, so we don't want to discredit that. As far as the options, we did get some bids back, installing the cameras, as I mentioned in the prior meeting. We
We have one option that's there's solar cameras that would be $6,400. That would be it would install two of them with a 5-year warranty. There would be some maintenance that would be required every 4 to 6 months. Staffing, as I mentioned earlier, too. I honestly don't even think we'd recoup the cost of what we make at the driving range for what we would pay to have a staff person down there on a consistent basis. As far as the netting, one of the options that Mr. Haar talked about was the extensions. One of the things we did talk about in the prior meeting, too, it's the recommendation of the company, West Coast Netting, as well as Niels Fugel, who installed our prior poles, that we don't add extensions on that. They say that they typically don't work, and the issue is more of the wind causing some friction on that that would deteriorate much quicker. So they actually all, both recommended that not happen. From a price standpoint, I know that was one of the things we didn't really get to for the net issues. We have a relationship with Niels Fugel that we've used in the past, and I know that that's been something that's been beneficial. We've got two different bids if we were to do that. One of them would be just extending, getting rid of all the rest of the poles where he's talking about from the west side where we started, I think it was the 5 poles, and just replacing the rest of the poles to the same height. To do that, plus the netting, would be $61,000.
Did you say $61,000?
$61,000. We do have...
Is that
That's from West Coast Netting.
Is that reusing the existing net or completely all new netting?
Completely all new netting. I apologize. That's the existing netting with 20 feet on top of that. So what they would do is they'd keep the existing poles there and then add the existing poles on the other side of it. And then they would have the poles go up, and then where the net is on the inside of the driving range, they would install the net above that so that if the ball hit, it doesn't drop on the other side. It would bounce back on the inside.
So where it steps now, you're saying all those would be raised up to the height?
Yeah, and it wouldn't be post to post. It would be lollygag. It would be a little bit farther distance, so we would do fewer poles. So instead of, let's say, I think it was 50 feet where we're currently at, I think it would go 75 feet every other, the new poles that they would install from
but
there.
But that would be the whole driving range?
That would be the rest, continuing where we had done last time, all the way to the rest of the, to the end of the poles.
Could any of that be traded for?
Yeah, so that was just the option from West Coast Netting. Now, we did contact Niels Fugel, and Niels Fugel has...
How much longer are the current nets going to be good for?
You know, they're typically, they say anywhere from 10 to 15 years. We just replaced them when we just did everything about 3 years ago, two, three years ago.
So we're looking about 10 more years?
Yeah, so we probably have.
And how much was that? Years.
Was it 48?
It was
48,000 or something.
I want to say it was like 42. 40, it was somewhere right in there.
But we didn't replace the poles, all of the poles.
Right, we just did the 5 poles. Yeah. And last time we did do, we did work with was Niels Fugel again. So Niels Fugel is willing to do a trade out with the golf course like they did in the past. What they would do is come in and basically we would give them 2 years of a corporate pass. So it's going to be cheaper to go this route if we go this way using Niels Fugel to do the poles and then them come do the netting. Because Niels Fugel, we could get down to around $33,350 out of pocket to do the same thing, and that's with a $15,000 trade out with for 2 years of a corporate pass. So it would drop it pretty significantly.
So you're saying
about $13,000.
The total overall. The total cost for both of them, if we used both of them, would be $33,000.
Yeah, so Niels Fugel would do the poles, and then West Coast would just do the netting.
And that total cost would be $33,000.
$33,350 ballpark right in there. And these are just their quotes, and we've had them for about a month and a half, 2 months. So those are two options.
So what the option you're talking about is not adding to the existing poles, creating a separate line of poles
right.
that would start about where the other ones end and add, did you say 20 feet?
20 feet above the existing.
So an additional set of poles.
Yeah, so it would match. So it would look a little weird only because it wouldn't match up with the existing poles. It would go in between every other. Not a big deal.
Because the shorter ones are closer together is what you're
right.
saying.
Yeah. Right. And since we're only doing 20 feet up high, extending that saves us a little money on
take it. Is that only 20 feet less higher than
yeah.
the others?
Yeah. So it would match
what we have.
Seems higher than that. Or yeah. It seems more of a difference than 20 feet to me. But
yeah, and you know, okay. Again, to Mr. Hart's point, I made this earlier, and I'm going to be honest about this. I went down there a couple. It was probably about a month and a half ago with our superintendent and hit a couple balls, and there's no doubt it's pretty easy to hit the balls out that way. So definitely something that, you know, you have some options. We presented, you know, what you wanted us to go out and find. Any questions? One other thing we did discuss in the work session, I will get with Wade. We've got some signs. We've got new signs ordered so people know that the responsibility ultimately lands on the golfer. But we can definitely talk and do things as we discuss in work session, having staff be trained. However, we draw that up and have them talk and let people know when they go down there to be respectful, to do a better job of maybe focusing on hitting inside a little bit more. It's not going to prevent it. It's absolutely not. Golfer, you can be so errant on one shot, and the next cut, you can be as straight as you can be. So it's really an inconsistent sport. Any questions?
Did we look at the option of moving the net and the tee off areas closer together? Because that seems like it would resolve a lot of the issue. I don't know if we'd move the net or move the tee off area closer. What would be cheaper out of those two? But have we considered
when that? When you say closer, I guess I'm not understanding.
A lot of the tee off areas just are, you know, if you're teeing off on the other end, it looks like it's about 30 feet from the net.
Oh, you're talking the north and the south?
Yeah, so have them. It seems like it'd be the cheapest thing to move the tee boxes closer. I mean, it requires moving dirt, but it seems like if we were a lot.
It's a hill.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that in work session.
It's a hill. So it comes off the post.
Uh-huh.
And it's a pretty steep hill. It's like, it's barely steep hill. It's hard to even walk up it.
Yeah, and to be honest,
maybe if they leveled that out so that it wasn't, you know, such a hill.
But then you'd have to put like some sort of retaining wall there because you're at the steepness of being able to mow it even. I think it's already marginal to even mow that hill.
Yeah.
That's just the thought. So what do you think the cost of that one could be?
You know, we've not even looked at that, to be honest with you. One thing we discussed a couple months ago is, you know, can we move somebody with a driver to the south end closer to the net? Mm-hmm. To be honest with you, as we discussed in work session, that doesn't matter. You can still get it over if you really wanted to get it over. Mm-hmm. Because really the velocity of where that net ends and then it drops down that 20 feet, by the time you hit that ball and it hits that peak, it's going to be over if you shank it that way.
So can I make another recommendation to look at as well? We, in our fiscal 2016 budget, did a placeholder and approved $300,000 for a maintenance shed on the golf course. Why don't we look at reducing that cost by $35,000 and putting that cost towards these nets?
Say that again.
Reducing the cost of the maintenance shed by $35,000 so that we can build these nets.
I'm not opposed to that. And so on that item, Highland has approached us, and I forgot to bring this up in my comments. Highland has approached us about building a maintenance building where our existing double wides exist,
mm-hmm.
for a building to be shared by us and them, and them sharing in the cost. And so there's potentially cost savings there. So they approached us. They had said no in the past, but they've come back. So I guess we could say that we're in negotiation in terms of what that would look like.
I like that idea.
So my only concern, Jenny, is that let's say that we put this new line of nets there and it still doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do next?
Well, I don't think it ever will.
I agree.
Work. It's never going to work 100%. Mm-hmm. It's just impossible. It's a golf course.
What's true?
But what percentage does it reduce it? Do we know?
Well, if he says 50% on Mr. Botita's, that's great.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So I mean, it's not what they want to hear, obviously, but that's great, you know.
So for that cost, we're only looking at 50%?
The T-box.
Yeah, the five.
His opinion is if, like, the first net farthest west was installed on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So when you're teeing off, the net's behind you.
And I mentioned that earlier. Looking in hindsight, we probably could have started a little bit in a little bit further, yeah.
So he thinks if that was there, it would be even more.
Sure.
So, Greg, we're only looking at 50% reduction in errant.
Well, to the one home, which, as to his point, is because part of it, it stops where there's still that line of flight. If it were extended, what he's saying is it would be even less than that.
Okay.
So I guess what we're saying is, Mr. Haar, I don't think there's ever going to be a complete elimination.
Sure.
And, you know, the balls that bounce on the road hit in the park, that's maybe a different issue as opposed to your home, because I think we're trying to address your home right now. And the various issues aligned with that, and that, you know, we're trying to help you as a homeowner. Yeah. Government doesn't have money other than what we take from you guys' taxes. Sure. So doing something like this, you know, does that open a door so that we have to do something a similar amount to every resident? And so I think that's what the council is trying to weigh, is just how do we try and help you as a homeowner and be fair to all the residents which are subsidizing that?
Sure. And just one last comment. I mean, when we bought the lot, we had an idea that there'd be an occasional golf ball.
It's just more than you anticipated.
But the extent to which we've seen golf balls is way more than we ever expected. Okay. And we may have not bought that lot if we would have known the extent of the golf balls reaching our lot. And we are truly concerned for the safety of the general public. It's just, we're not here for our own interest. Our kids play at the park every day, and golf balls are reaching occasionally middle of the park. And, you know, people always ask us, oh yeah, we've seen golf balls bounce off the road, hit the sidewalk. I'm just concerned about, also as much as our own home, the safety of Cedar Hills too.
Yeah.
So we're not here just for us. Of course we are.
But sure. One other thing I forgot to bring up too, and I don't know if you saw that when you said the agenda, one of the other things we did talk to West Coast Netting about too is if they were to just put a net in their own home. They did give us a bid to do that. If it was a 15-foot high by 60-foot wide, they gave us a bid of $8,100. Now, if they were to come do our full extension of to extend it the way we just discussed, they would reduce that because they're already on site to down to $5,200. So one other option just to throw out there.
Okay. I do like Mrs. Reese's idea, though, in terms of taking some money that's already been budgeted and perhaps using it for something like this. Okay. This is a discussion item. It's not an action item. Any further comments?
I do. I'm pondering whether we're going to spend the money to do this. And so I'm wondering, as you golf there and you said you hit some balls that easily cleared the fence, assuming they were clearing the shorter fence, mm-hmm. The shorter net, would the 20 feet have stopped it, or would you be going over that?
No, you could still go over it. But, you know, again, that's going to be the golfer.
I mean
probably,
on your particular shots.
Yeah, that's what I'm
would
saying.
Your particular balls have
you know,
been
but
stopped?
I golf a little – well, I guess I don't as much anymore, but – a good golfer, it will still clear that. You know, it's still going to get over that. You know, the novice golfer, the ones that typically do go to your driving range, for the most part, it will probably prevent that. You're still going to have it, though, to the point we've been discussing tonight. The total of adding another 20 feet is not going to prevent it from
Would 40
flying.
Feet?
You know, I don't know that you can ever say it's enough. Because if somebody really wants to get it, I think as a golfer, I can attest to this too. At some point, you could get over, but you're definitely reducing the
percentage. Yeah, I guess what I'm getting at here is, what's the current height of the fence right now?
50 feet.
50 feet tall. So is 70 feet sort of a standard height for driving ranges? And they're like, yeah, that stops most of them. Or do they usually go to 80? Do they usually go to 90 or 100?
You know, I honestly don't know the answer to that.
So maybe that might be worth looking to know, like, what is a typical height for those driving range fences, and where do they usually put in what's considered?
Yeah, and I think it depends. Like, I mean, like, you throw Hobble Creek out there as a good example. Hobble Creek's so unique because their driving range is tiny. So they did have to go higher with a net that would catch the ball and drop it back in there. So each one's unique based upon really the scope of the terrain that it's on. So, I mean, I guess that there's really not a good answer for that. But we can call around and find out what, you know, averages are.
Okay. Why don't you do that?
Okay.
We don't have an answer for you tonight. But we talked about this on the work session. We talked about it again tonight. It will come up again. Okay. Let's move on to our next item.
Mayor, can we excuse the scouts?
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for being here, guys. Thank you. Next item, last item, is a discussion on city code relating to zoning and development. So,
Mr. Bunker, are you going to lead off discussion, or
we're going to have Chandler Goodwin.
Chandler's going to
maybe
do
jump
it
on that one. There's not an item or a memo in the packet, but Chandler's prepared with some items.
We've already talked in the work session about the timing of the moratorium that was placed on November 17th. We have until April 17th. There is a council meeting that night, so we have a little over 4 months from tonight to wrap up all the loose ends that need to get tied up. We covered that a little bit in the work session. I appreciate Daniel putting together that list of what needs to get done. The way I see it, it's three-pronged. It's the design guidelines need to be addressed. I am assuming part of that will be codified, certain sections of it. The general plan land use element needs to be addressed as well. Portions of that relating to the SC1 commercial zone need to be nailed down, and the vision established at a higher level there. And then finally, the municipal code needs to be reviewed, and there's certain aspects, there's various portions of this, the municipal code, in I can think of at least three separate sections, Title 9, 10, and 11, that all need a review during this process. Each one of those projects by itself could be considered a very large project, so we have a lot of work on our hands here. And each one of those does need to go through legal review, and in most cases, they would need to go through the Planning Commission for their recommendation to this body prior to this body adopting those. May 17th is the deadline. Is it May 17th or April 17th?
I thought you said April earlier.
I said April, but I've got written down here May. I think it is May. Excuse me. It is May 17th. So in order to meet public hearing notices, we created a schedule. We sent it to you in November in your Dropbox packet, working backwards. So if you were to assume that the final adoption is going to occur on May 17th, in order to public notice that, you need to public notice that 10 days prior to that, and then it needs to be adopted by the Planning Commission, so you look at their April meeting, and that has to be a public hearing as well, so you go back 10 days. So really the final, and I think this is where I got confused, the final product needs to actually be done right around April 13th is kind of what we're looking at. And that's in order for the city staff to do all of the noticing and have the Planning Commission give their adequate time and their adequate voice, and then have it come to the City Council for a discussion meeting and then for an adoption meeting.
So a question on that process, and maybe Mr. Shaw could weigh in on that. We've already had the Planning Commission reviewing our design guidelines and our municipal code, and they've given us our recommendations, and it's been through public hearings there, and it's been through approval. So do we need to go back to the Planning Commission for approval of changes we make, or can we just adopt them without going back to the
public? They've gone through the design guidelines. If you're going to take a portion of the design guidelines, let's say you're going to take out the portions relating to the height of a building, or you're going to create something that addresses density, that's new code. That needs to go back to the Planning Commission for their recommendation, because that's a Title 10 issue, a land use issue, and that needs to go back for their recommendation and their review. So even though they've looked at it in the design guidelines, it wasn't in the city code. So the way I'm looking at it, I think they need to get a shot.
Yeah, because I think of the design guidelines in the city code as one thing. They were adopted by ordinance into our city code. That was what our legal counsel told us.
I would defer to Mr. Shaw then.
Yeah, they were adopted by reference, but just to be safe and to avoid any citizen challenge, it would be better off going through the Planning Commission process. If you'd rather risk that, I think it's potentially defensible either way, but why do it if you don't have to?
So, Daniel, we talked about having weekly meetings with me. How about if we invited a Planning Commission member to join us?
Good idea.
I think so, too. So Planning Commission is going to be choosing a new chairman here shortly. And depending who that is in their schedule, then I think we should invite them. And so they're part of the discussion early on.
That's a good idea. On that note, because Jenny had started this process with me, if we wanted to start with a meeting on Thursday evening this week so that she could report back, she's already done some work looking at city code.
I can't meet this Thursday.
This Thursday is not as out for you. Okay.
So, but I could meet
later Friday afternoon after Jenny's finished with work, if you wanted to.
Yeah, and that won't work for me.
Okay.
I could do Saturday.
The only way I could do it is if you wanted to meet 8 o'clock on Thursday night.
I could make that.
That works for me.
You can make that too, Jenny?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then why don't we plan on meeting in the city offices in the boardroom? All right. Chandler, anything else?
Yeah, real quickly. Councilmember Zappala, we met last week, and we had discussed a map you wanted to look at.
I am a huge fan of maps.
Thank you. So, we printed this on the plotter, so we didn't want to print one for everybody, but there's essentially the same map. One has the actual satellite aerial of the commercial zone. The other one does not. But the one that does not show some of the distances there. You can see for reference sake, you can kind of see where the sub-districts of the SC1 zone are broken up. You can see in the orange box that's outlined in orange, that is the office district where it's built out. There's a church, and then it's the Lexington Heights and the Charleston. The pink box is the mixed-use office retail zone, and you can see it's kind of got a funny shape. It looks kind of like a capital L flipped backwards. The city's portion, the city's 9 acres, it's outlined in green on this aerial image, but not on the other one, but it's not actually assigned or designated to a certain sub-district at this point, so that's something that would need to be discussed. And then finally, the neighborhood retail sub-district is outlined in blue there. So you can kind of see how it's laid out on an aerial map. And you can kind of see the distances there, too. I spitballed the distance from the Lexington Heights to the south, see how far set back that building is, and also the Walmart. They're both approximately 50 feet from the nearest neighborhood residential area. On this map without the aerial, you can see that there's two lines surrounding the neighborhood there. One is a 30-foot line. That's the current setback. That would be the minimum distance that a commercial entity could build a potential business next to that development. The other one is 50 feet, giving you kind of a perspective of what's in relation. The 50 feet is a ballpark where the Planning Commission's making a recommendation. They might recommend 45, so you can kind of see how close that is.
And that's a setback for a building.
For a building,
but
yeah.
Not for parking.
Not for parking. Right now, as the code stands, or not code, as the design guidelines stand, it's 15-foot landscape. So out of the 30 feet, 15 feet of it could be sidewalk or some sort of green space.
Path, walking path.
Walking path, yeah.
It's 15 feet?
15 feet, yeah.
By the way, Chandler, we had talked about meeting weekly. We'd certainly like to have you join us if your schedule permits.
Yeah, let me know what it is.
So typically, we're going to try and meet on Friday mornings.
Okay. If it's a standing appointment, I can typically plan for it.
And so this Thursday night, they would like to meet at 8:30. If your schedule permits, you're welcome. But it's, you know, late night. So if you got other things planned, we're okay with that.
Okay. Let me check my schedule.
8 or 8:30?
Excuse me. Did I say 8:30?
You said 8 before.
8 o'clock.
Yeah. Plan on it. I'll plan on me being there. If I can't make it, I'll let you know.
Okay. Very good.
So those are the things I prepared for tonight. Councilmember Zappala wanted to discuss the zone boundaries. And I think there's various theories that you can look at. And so I think that it's up to the council to decide how those sub-districts wrap around that commercial or wrap around that neighborhood zone or what the future of those sub-districts looks like. Because right now on the smart piece, for example, it creates kind of a weird situation where you have one almost quarter of it that's in one sub-district and then the 3/4 is in another. And it doesn't really line up very well with where the road is. So it creates some logistical challenges, as Corey and the smarts can attest to in the actual generating a project for presentation. Mm-hmm. So I think those are things that the city needs to look at as you master plan that road. And if you want commercial on 4700 as it's put in, I think those sub-districts should reflect that desire as well.
Didn't we have at one point a conceptual plan for the commercial zone that included showing the road going all the way through?
There is. I've seen it. I can have it for you on Thursday night. It's vastly different. I think the road diagram is probably very similar to what we're still hoping for, but the actual building layout at this point defunct. It's no longer relevant.
Yeah.
Anything else, Daniel?
No, I really appreciate you getting the maps.
You can have them if you'd like them.
I will hang them in my office. I guess my question for council is just as you're looking at those maps, and maybe we should, one of us should stand up there and hold, especially this one there for everybody. But you know, I'd love to get some sense of whether you're liking the idea that I have that I think I'd like to see a single commercial zone for the whole area, and then an overlay zone with additional uses that we feel would be permitted. So the commercial zone being limited to strictly commercial, and then an overlay zone that would allow other uses such as office buildings and so forth. And I'd love to see that have the shape of the current lines here, just chopping off the L. That would provide plenty of commercial property in the areas where we think it's going to come.
By 4700 West. You want to chop off the tail end, the thin end of that L,
yeah,
and make that mostly commercial.
Yeah.
But you, I mean, you understand the thought process that why that L is there as a buffer.
That was to protect the residents.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand.
It's to create
that.
A buffer between the neighborhood residential and the residences themselves. So, I don't know. Keep that in mind as well as we make that discussion.
Yeah.
So, it's not as seamless as one might hope to create to put the lines on the map. There's, side effects that we need to discuss.
Well, and the question there is, I mean, if we're talking about a 50-foot setback, is that enough of a buffer from any kind of commercial that would come in?
Yeah. Well, I think it depends on what's in the 50 feet. If it's green space, it's much different from a 50-foot wide parking lot.
Yeah, but I mean, over here out by Lexington Heights, it's 50 foot for the building, but there's still parking there.
But the nature of the business is also very quiet.
Yes. So.
Anything else, Daniel?
I'm guessing that the residents in that area are still going to want that.
They're going to want
that buffer zone of some
buffer.
Sort. They're not going to want something heavy.
They don't want heavy commercial
going right behind their homes.
So you would consider then taking that line and just continuing it?
That's what the Planning Commission recommended when we talked about it in Planning Commission as well. Yes.
One of the problems with that, though, is you got to make sure that you're creating a zone that's usable.
Yeah, that's my concern.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
So that's why I would love to get that conceptual design from past years.
I'll bring
the
conceptual design, and also,
and if we overlaid that road onto here, approximately where it would go, then that would give us a sense of, you know, does that even make sense?
Yeah. Okay. We'll bring that.
We are going to be discussing this quite a bit. If any council has any other instructions in terms of how we get this all accomplished by middle of April so we can finalize that in the middle of May, their thoughts are welcome. Mr. Crawley, you were not here during work session, but we talked about myself and two council members meeting weekly on this. And so I'll be a permanent member. I think Daniel will as well, and we'll rotate others. So we'll welcome your participation in this as well, okay?
Yeah, and so one thing to keep in mind is also that you could get that kind of a buffering by having an overlay zone where, or a different sub-district where different commercial uses are allowed.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if you could identify commercial uses that are lower impact, then you could say those are the ones that might go closer to residences and higher impact might go out towards the street.
Yeah. Agreed.
Council, anything else to say?
Yeah. Let's not forget the property owners have rights.
Absolutely.
So I would expect some input from the owners of the property.
Yeah.
It's not just we're not dictators.
Well, in the case of the city's portion, we're the landowner, so I guess we get a lot of say in that.
Unless we can dictate, private property, they have rights.
Is there anything else you'd like for Thursday night to have available that night?
I think that'll be a start.
I think that's a good starting point.
If anything comes up in the meantime, let me know.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Council, nothing else. That concludes. I will take a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
I will second that my motion.
Mr. Paulus has seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much.